Support for KHOI is provided by Pasta al Forno Italian Restaurant, 2601 East 13th Street, Ames. Now hiring bartenders, servers, hostesses.
More information at 515-337-1422 or in person.
Daniel in the Kitchen talks about food. Daniel in the Kitchen talks recipes. Daniel in the Kitchen talks about lots of other things on Community Radio. Welcome to the Daniel in the Kitchen. My name is Lana Noctigal.
And I'm Donna Prisgintas.
We gather here around our kitchen table to talk about food, farming, advice, recipes, and opinions. And we are at the studios of KHOI Community Radio in beautiful downtown Ames, Iowa. Well, we made it into April. Things are looking good.
Yeah, a lot of good this is doing us, though.
Oh,
April looks just like March to me.
Well, we got a ways to go, I must admit. And that the news items have been very, very not so good. I mean, we've had chocolate factories blowing up, Donna. Chocolate factory.
I think that was a famous book, Lana.
No, that was, but this is for real. Actually, there was a woman that caught on fire and fell into a vat of chocolate. Really, in this,
it was horrible.
But of course, you can find out about all this stuff on the internet. But talk about that's pretty awful. And tornadoes, that's in the news. And train wrecks all over the place. What is coming?
This is a bah humbug Easter, I guess.
It is. One of the most recent train wrecks was in Montana, and nobody was hurt. Nobody was hurt, but.
And apparently they behaved a little bit better.
Yeah, but they weren't carrying anything too toxic, but they had a whole lot of beer on the train, and so lost.
Goodness, that's at least in trains very innocuous.
We shall hope. Oh, lots of stuff going on. And here is another news item from the Donalana Kitchen News Department. Tick-a-tick-tick-a-tick-tick-tick. That's our ticker tape. Yes, it is. Senator Bernie Sanders joined Senator Elizabeth Warren and Representative Katie Porter, bringing up this issue in our nation's capital. Remember how there was this egg shortage and egg prices spiked and people were going
crazy? Right, because of avian flu. Which is an ongoing. Now they're thinking they're going to have to vaccinate all the chickens.
Oh, that'll be fun.
Yeah, good luck.
Okay, anyway, however, kind of looking at the aftermath of this and found out that Cal-Maine Foods, which is an egg producer in, well, Cal-Maine, I suppose, from California to Maine, who knows, which controls about 20% of the U.S. egg market.
That's a large chunk of any market.
Yes, yeah. Announced that its revenue rose to over 700%, the profit that they're bringing in, because they just happen to be able to have raised their egg prices. So the senators were a little leery of this and wondered, how can these people have 700% profit increase while working families paid record prices for eggs?
Well, that's how they got the profit increase. Come on.
Isn't America great? Keeping with the egg metaphor here, Senator Elizabeth Warren says we need to crack down on corporate price gouging. So we will do it. Well,
so this particular company had no adverse. They didn't have a lot of dead birds. Apparently.
No, they came out of it pretty well, but they just kept raising prices and fanning the flames about egg shortages. So be careful out there. You know that all this profit did probably not trickle down to the farmer, or heaven forbid, did not trickle down to the chickens.
The chickens didn't get a raise, yeah.
Yeah, none of that. Oh, goodness. Anyway, today we're going to be celebrating some Easter things. Easter is next week, next Sunday.
It's chickens, rabbits, lambs,
yeah,
baby things.
We're going to be celebrating eggs, and hold on to your hats because we have some rather interesting bunny jokes.
Yeah, yeah. This is Lana's seasonal thing, the bad bunny jokes.
Well, why not? I mean, you Google this. Sort of, I could have. They even had a category for adults only bad bunny jokes, but I this is a family
show. That's not
show.
Our style,
no, we
Lana.
Don't do that. We don't. So, Easter's coming up. Easter bonnets, Easter basket, Easter bunnies, and no.
Now, when you were a child, yeah. Did you get a little Easter hat and new Easter
oh,
dress
yes,
every year?
Oh, yes, I've got many unfortunate pictures of me in Easter bonnets. Oh,
yeah.
How did little, we survive? Yeah. How about you?
Oh, yes. And my sister and I, my mother, would often make us kind of either matching dresses or similar dresses. Like one year I don't know how this woman had time to do this. She made us a coat and a dress each. So mine was navy blue with white trim, and my sister's was white with navy blue trim. And then, of course, we had new gloves, patent leather shoes, and little hats, and oh, goodness, it was a thing.
But we were so good. And just like the Peter Rabbit Cottontail song, my mom used to get an orchid from my dad for Easter. That she wore to church.
Oh, yes, of course. We forgot about that tradition.
There you go.
Good for your dad.
Yeah, he was good. And of course, we had many chocolate Easter bunnies that we could bite the ears off of. That, oh,
yes,
good memories.
Those
good
big memories. Hollow ones.
Yeah, yeah, crunch, yeah. Crunch. Let's talk about eggs. We talked about egg prices going up, but if people think about eggs for Easter.
Easter eggs, yes.
Easter. What are your thoughts on eggs, Donna?
It's the best, most complete protein.
There you
go. The amino acid composition of an egg. Now, so an amino acid is a bit of protein, and human beings, different animals have different kind of requirements for which ones, but there's a certain proportion of amino acids that are optimal for human energy production, right? And eggs are the food that is closest to that perfect proportion for humans. So they're nutritionally very complete.
Very good.
And fortunately, even with the price raises, they're affordable.
And talk about bang for the buck. Eggs are pretty
right. And every once in a while, there was that period where they kept saying, no, they give you high cholesterol, don't eat eggs. Well, that has, of course, been revised, thank heavens. I didn't stop eating them because they're nature's most perfect protein food.
Yeah, they're good. And this time of year, we think of eggs and new birth. And I've got a small flock of new chicks that have been growing in my basement. They're about a week and a half old.
How many do you have?
25. I always allow for attrition because certainly, but this is the healthiest bunch of chicks I've had in ages.
And they actually arrived in the mail.
Oh, they arrived in a little box, peeping in the mail. And you wouldn't believe how fast they grow. They show up about the size of a marshmallow. You know, they're just happy and healthy. But now, even just like a week and a half later, they're turning into little dinosaurs, you know, a little longer. And they're
got a few feathers on them.
Feathers are sticking out at odd angles. And they're going to turn into chickens yet, Donna. I just know they are. So, good.
We have a few hatcheries here in Iowa. You know, that would be a fun road trip sometime to go and visit. I don't know, do they let you visit or do they have biosecurity regulations?
Oh, they probably do. Oh. Besides, it's like anything else. I think it's like too much chicken. I mean,
I don't know, but I'm imagining the person whose job it is to take the freshly, I guess they have to take them the instant they hatch and put them in the box and pop them in the mail.
Yeah.
I mean, that is an
odd amazing?
Occupation.
Isn't that amazing? And then there's those fortunate few who are talented enough to sex chickens. Evidently, I mean, I've tried. I've turned them over. I can't tell.
That is a job that is not done by artificial intelligence.
No. There are people that can tell. It's important. Do you want roosters? Do you want layers? Uh-huh.
So well, apparently when you order, you get is it called a sexed run? So they're all of the gender that you want, or you can buy mixed and take your luck.
Yeah, you can buy mixed and take your luck.
Yeah.
I decided to concentrate on all girls this time.
I'll tell you, When my kids were little, the first time we got chickens, so my daughter was about 8 or something, and we hatched the chicken that we had. What did she must have come with a rooster. I can't remember how we did this, or maybe the farmer brought her. No, I don't know. Anyway, she laid eggs, and we decided to let them hatch. So she was sitting on 4 eggs. Do you know what we got? 4 roosters out of 4 eggs.
Yeah, see.
Yep. My that was the beginning of the end of my chicken breeding business, right?
That can happen.
Because, of course, they grew up and all fought.
Of course. They will. Chicken, there is all these chicken-related statements. Well, like there's a pecking order.
It's something like one rooster for every 20 chickens or something?
That'll about do it.
More or less. Yeah, then the boys will behave themselves.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, boy.
Maybe does that mean it takes 20 hens to keep a rooster from fighting?
No, it has to do with personalities. Roosters and chickens too can be very aggressive. I mean,
had a nasty rooster. Yeah. He used to fly at me with his spurs out. And if you've never had that happen to you, it is wild. They come running at you. They throw themselves up in there and the spurs are on the back of their feet. So they stick their flip their feet up sort of. So the spur comes right at you and it hurts.
It hurts. My response, pardon me, animal lovers, I turn around and give it a big soccer ball kick across the pen.
One time this rooster, you know, I put up with him for a long time. I grabbed a big stick and I was so mad. I whacked him so hard. He just clunked on the ground. I thought he was dead. Uh-huh. I thought I'd killed him. So I went in the house for a while to calm down. When I came back, he was up and jumping around.
Ha! So roosters, chickens.
I threw him over the fence for the coyotes to eat.
Oh, here, I have a chicken joke.
Oh! Okay.
See, are you good or what? Now this is a chick joke. Two chicks had an Easter party. It was one shell of a time. Onward. I think I mention this every year, but if you're going to be hard-broiling eggs, no matter where, especially if you get your eggs fresh from a farmer or they're just
right out of the chicken.
Out of the chicken, they do not peel well. You can hard-boil anything, but they will not peel nicely if they are really, really fresh because a shell is full of this egg substance, and if it sits on the counter or just gets a little bit older, it loses a tiny bit of moisture every day. And if you want
it starts to dry out through the shell.
Through the shell. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the shells are amazing things. If you really want hard-boiled eggs that peel well, at least put your eggs on the counter for a couple of days. And don't worry about it too much. After all, eggs sit under a chicken for about 28
days. Oh, yeah, we're really trained to keep the eggs in the refrigerator. But in truth, they can, you know, I mean, when I used to keep chickens, I would just leave. They were so pretty because they were different colors. Like Lana's eggs are. Some are brown, some are blue. I would leave them out in a basket because they were so pretty.
Very good.
No problem.
Very good.
So how old do you think a chicken egg should be before it will peel well?
At least a week.
Oh, okay,
yeah, at least.
So,
but I had some in the refrigerator, and I left them out the night before just to heck with it. Yeah, because I made for Easter. I didn't do any fancy colored eggs, or I haven't done any yet, and I don't think I will. But I did hard boil up a dozen, and I found a recipe for Chinese tea eggs, which really isn't an Asian Easter thing. It's an Asian lunar.
New Year?
Lunar New Year tradition. It is, this is the Year of the Rabbit, by the way. But these are eggs.
They don't have a Year of the Chicken, do they? No.
No.
Okay. Year of the Rabbit. Rooster, that's right. They do.
Okay.
That's right.
Okay, they do.
Year of the Rooster.
Okay. But anyway, Chinese, and I've made these tea eggs before. And before I just used tea. Really, really, really strong tea to color them.
They're really pretty, Lana. They look sort of like those marble eggs in brown and white.
They're marble. What you do is you soak boiled eggs in something, but you, after you boil the eggs, you crack the shell a little bit. Go around and around and around with a spoon and don't peel them. But then you put them back in a solution. And this is a recipe for a Chinese tea eggs. And evidently it's street food in,
Right, you read the recipe and then I'm going to try them.
Now,
they smell good.
They only sat in the brine for about 2 days, and you can do it up to 7 days.
So at room temperature.
Okay, here we go. Two large eggs, you boil them, and they too say don't boil cold eggs. Let them warm up a bit and let them age a little bit. Okay, so half a cup of soy sauce, 2 tablespoons rice wine or dry sherry vinegar, 2 teaspoons sugar, 4 slices of fresh ginger. I use powdered ginger. I didn't have 1 whole star anise, 1 teaspoon of peppercorns whole, 1 teaspoon coarse salt, and 3 tea bags.
This is for just 2 eggs?
No, 12.
Oh, 12. Yeah, okay, 12. Okay.
So you've got this kind of pickling thing. You boil all that down. You have kind of a pickling thing. And after the eggs have cooked and you let them cool a little bit because they're easier to handle, you take a spoon and you break the shell all around so the shells are cracked. And then you let them sit in this, you can put it in this, not hot, but you can put it in the slightly warm pickling solution. And I let them set for,
Said 2 days.
2 days, yeah. 2 days, yeah. So they could probably be stronger, but there you have it.
All right, I'm going to try it.
What we have here is a peeled egg that is marbled on the outside, huh? And it's soy sauce and sugar and ginger and anise. And I'd make it. Remember in past show, we've talked about pickled with beets, pickled beet eggs.
Right, like same bar idea. Food.
Yeah, same idea.
I love pickled eggs.
Yeah. And
this is like a Chinese version. They're very good.
Yeah. I like them. They're pretty.
I might have to run home and do
They're pretty. It's good.
Okay.
It's good. So there we go. In honor of the Year of the Rabbit, we did some Chinese tea eggs. Ha, how's that?
Very nice, Lana. I have some friends coming for the weekend that have two twin. They have twin 8-year-old girls. So obviously we have to do something seasonally appropriate.
Yeah, so. Make it ahead so it does serve. But it's fun. Mm. It's fun. Yeah, see. Very
delicious.
Good.
Delicious.
So as you're eating your egg there, do you have any egg recipes you'd like to share?
Sure, I'll talk with my mouth full on radio. Sorry.
Well, this is a food show, folks. We eat on the air. There you go.
Yes, on air eating, highly recommended. So I do have, except I have to find it. I have a crustless quiche recipe that is from the New York Times that I use a lot.
Crustless
quiche. I mean, I do love quiche, crust or no, but you know, it's like an extra step if you have to make the crust. Now, Lana makes the crust in her sleep practically, but it's still a little bit of labor. It's called crustless egg and cheese quiche. Now, the recipe in the Times, calls for, buttoned mushrooms, which you cook in a head. So it's a mushroom and cheese quiche. But I've used the same base for, like, last week I made it with some little bits of steamed kale, some bacon bits, and cheddar cheese. So, I mean, you can put, you know, peppers and onions in cheese, whatever. But what I like about it, it's really quick to throw together, and then you just put it in the oven and bake it for, how long? Not very long. 40 minutes or so. So you just butter a casserole pan, and then instead of a crust, you put a little, and butter it well. You put a little bit of breadcrumbs in the bottom of the pan. It says a tablespoon of fine, plain, dry breadcrumbs, right? Mm-hmm. And then you kind of cook up whatever ingredients you, the ingredients like the vegetables or the bacon or the whatevers that you're putting into it have to be pre-cooked. So you just kind of, you know, saute some onions and peppers, for example, and, or cook up your bacon and crumble that. And then you mix it with 1 cup of grated cheese. So, you know, Gruyere, cheddar, or a mix or whatever. Then for the liquid, let's see, it does say you, so in this recipe, it's not too fussy though. I don't always do it this way. You do have to butter and crumb the bottom first. Then it says to put your vegetables on top of that cooked, and then the cheese on top of that. And then you mix up a cup of half and half or heavy cream, depending on how caloric you want it. And so 1 cup of half and half. And 1 cup of milk. So 2 cups of liquid.
Ooh, that's lots. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. It's substantial. And it comes out custardy because this is not like a.
This isn't scrambled eggs.
No, no, it's not. It's much more quiche-y. So then you have two cups of liquid, then 4 eggs lightly beaten, 1/2 teaspoon of salt, pepper, and then you pour that over the vegetable cheese mixture, and then you just sprinkle 1/4 cup of Parmesan on top. And then you just stick it in the oven. Was it a hot oven? I can't remember. No, slow oven, 325 for 40 to 45 minutes until it kind of still wiggles in the middle. And then you just bring it out and let it cool before you slice it. But it's so easy and so delicious. And, you know, if you use the higher the butterfat content in the if you use cream instead of half and half, it becomes very special and rich. And I suppose you could probably do it with just 2 cups of milk if you wanted it to be a little less caloric, because it's got all the cheese in it anyway. But I really like it because you can, you know, like if you're having somebody come for lunch or brunch or whatever, you get it in the oven and it's working before the guests arrive, and it kind of works out very nice. And it's, you know, it's a little nicer than scrambled eggs. You can slice it onto a plate, you know, that kind of thing. So that's been my current kind of favorite eggy, brunchy dish.
Yeah. 3 cheers for eggs. That's good. And after you're done Easter bunnying next weekend, there's all those, if you do have hard-boiled eggs, there's always the joy of deviled eggs.
Oh, absolutely. And Lana and I want to encourage you to bust out of the, well, nothing wrong with having traditional food. So the tradition is mayonnaise, mustard, and paprika sprinkled on the top.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes. And believe it, I had to grow up to a pretty old age to realize that paprika actually has a flavor. Because, you know, I thought it was just this red dust stuff. And, of course, my mom would never throw anything away, so she'd make deviled eggs, and she'd put this red dust on the top, and, you know, those old Tone's spice jars would be in her cupboard for a long time. But, yes,
probably didn't use paprika in anything except the deviled eggs, right?
No, but you'd have
that box could last for years, right?
You could have it for years. Anyway, yeah.
Yeah.
Paprika.
Yeah, so... if you don't want to continue that tradition, you can buy a fresh paprika and use it in a lot of things. If it doesn't have an odor, throw it away.
Aha. Wise.
It should have a flavor and an odor. So we were trying to think of other things besides that standard, like you could put capers in it or
horseradish.
Horseradish, right.
Lots of dried or fresh
herbs, all kinds of chives and herbs,
and yum.
Not that there's much in the garden right now.
No, but even then, if you could smell those herbs and put some out of your out of
maybe.
Your
do you think the wild mustards are up yet?
I haven't seen any.
Oh wow,
we have
a
maybe
late,
by next week.
A late spring this year.
Oh, you're listening to KHOI, and this is the Donna Lana Kitchen Tasty Radio for the heart of Iowa. Welcome back. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen. We're talking about eggs and chickens, and here's kind of a shout-out to all those pretty roosters out there. That tune was called The Peacock Rag. Yes, it was. Pretty feathers all over the place. Oh, time for another bunny joke. How do you get an Easter bunny to work for more than one day?
Oh, dear.
It's hard. Raise its celery. Yep, that's pretty
oh,
bad.
Oh, dear. Oh,
that's
dear.
Pretty bad. That's pretty bad, yes. Don. This is a flash to the past here. What was Peter Cottontail's name in the 70s?
Pete?
Peter Polyester Tail. Well, there.
Right. I think you have to be a certain age to appreciate that. But
I like it. I like it. All kind of images happen there. For this next part, I would like to have a disclaimer for young ears out there, because rabbits are a big part of Easter, and we like rabbit here. We're going to discuss rabbit as in... Donna's got some
the
recipes.
The dead bunny. The
yes.
Dead bunny.
Okay. So, what would you do to cook a rabbit, Donna?
Well, the main thing that you need to remember about cooking rabbit, and I love rabbit. Our wild rabbits in Iowa, if you've got a friend who catches them in any way and gives you one, never say no. Unless it's not skinned.
Well, no, as wild animals go, they skin pretty.
Yeah. But have you ever done it? Have you ever skinned?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, good. So, okay. I've only watched, right?
Okay.
It's been left to the boys in our family to do that sort of thing. In fact,
my
father used to say, as a boy, his job was trapping rabbits, and they lived... Oh, I don't know, 2 or 3 hours from the Chicago market. And he would always tell of all of his grandchildren, for whom he made every grandchild got a rabbit trap. The little wooden box where you put bait in and the drawer drops down, you know. So it was live trapping. And Daddy used to tell them that when he was a boy, that was his job on the farm, and he got paid a nickel per rabbit pelt, and the pelts were sent into Chicago.
Huh.
And sold for a nickel each, and he got to keep the money. So,
wow.
We're big rabbit trappers in our family, right?
Very good.
But the main thing when cooking a rabbit, now, this is, Daddy used to say they used to boil them in vinegar. That recipe does not appeal to me. But
not at all.
Anyway, that was his good German heritage. Probably his mom did that. The French way, and I like this too, rabbits are usually fairly lean, so you want a recipe that has some fat in it, you know, added fat. So the traditional French way is you kind of wrap the beast in bacon, and then you do a fairly long braise, you know, till it breaks down. I suppose you could fry them too or something like that. But the traditional way is to cook them that way, maybe a little wine or something like that. And Lana brought in this recipe. This looks really good. This is from Mamushka, which is the Ukrainian cookbook. This is a garlicky white rabbit. So they're cooking it with, of course, garlic. And then they add a cup of sour cream or cream fraiche and some chicken stock. And then a braise in the oven for a couple of hours. So same thing, another high adding the fat to the rabbit. And it is delicious.
Yes. And, you know, rabbit, chicken, and us too, we're all kind of, we have two legs and two arms and the body in between. It does not.
What about lamb? That's the other Easter.
Lamb, yeah.
Lamb, baby lambs.
Yeah. All that sort of thing.
Well, you're not having any baby lambs this year. You've just got the old girls.
We've got the old girls. We'll breed them next year. But
having a year off from the bottle feeding.
Yeah. Well, we're going to work on our pastures, yes. Oh, wild rabbit is good. My friend Ben did a deep fried the rabbit. that he recently...
Pan-fried. Yeah,
melon.
Like fried chicken, only fried rabbit.
Yeah, it's very good.
Probably
very
same thing, dredge it in a little flour and salt and pepper and put in fried pan.
Well, you can. You mentioned wild rabbit. Some people raise rabbits, I remember that tame rabbit, as I recall, is even better than wild rabbit. But it's been a long time since I've had tame rabbit. Well, of course.
They have a
softer life, I suppose.
Probably. The wild ones are really good, unless they got buckshot in them.
Good luck. Well, that's true. That's true. Well, it's like, you know, chicken or fish bones. You got to kind of look out for those things. Very good. Ooh. So we're thinking of rabbit, and rabbit. Oh, how about another bunny joke? That's a good idea. What college did the Easter Bunny attend? John Hopkins. These are just really weird. And what happens when you cross the Easter Bunny with a shellfish?
You get a... Okay.
Close enough. You get an oyster bunny. Who knew? Who knew that you could just drive these things right into the ground?
These are good... This would be good jokes if you're having the card party over.
Yeah.
They're really good. Yeah.
Although this doesn't have too much to do with rabbit, there's a dish called Welsh rabbit or Welsh rarebit. And just to keep things even here, Welsh rarebit is a dish consisting of hot cheese sauce served over slices of toasted bread.
Right. There's no rabbit involved.
There is no rabbit.
That is a very confusing dish for us. Well, I suppose if you're Welsh, you'd know better. But
right. Well, evidently, it really is a big deal. Toasted cheese is a big deal. And it probably comes from really old history of England, Wales, Europe in general, when, of course, the lord of the manor had dibs on all meat that was shot in the...
Right, in the forest.
So
right, you couldn't go out and kill your rabbit on the king's land.
You couldn't have your own rabbit. So you got... Well...
Was poaching.
Cheese sounds pretty good, but So Welsh rabbit... was kind of, well, it was a pejorative term for one thing. Calling anything Welsh was kind of, they're the low-class people. That's all. So you call it Welsh rabbit, which means it was poor man's rabbit. Yeah. And there are a few versions here. Usually it's just baked cheese over toast with a little bit of ale and mustard added. That sounds good. And a little pepper. Some recipes call for Worcestershire sauce, but that's probably not too traditional. But you can make a Scotch rabbit with that's very much like Welsh rabbit, yes.
But, well, there is isn't it called a Scotch egg? And don't they have it out at the Mucky Duck?
Right, but that isn't rabbit.
No, but it is a funny recipe.
Yeah,
it's the cooked egg is then rolled in sausage and then deep fried or something like that.
It's really tasty, but I have no idea how you get the sausage to stick on the boiled egg
enough to go in the deep fryer.
And then you have to put crumbs on it. Crumbs on the outside.
Hmm.
And that too is traditionally, it's usually served with some sort of hot mustard, like Coleman's mustard.
Mm-hmm.
And so that can really, like, open up your sinus cavities and you're ready for a beer after that. But that's good beer food. That's good beer food. A buck rarebit or a buck Welsh rarebit is served with an egg on top. That makes it a buck rabbit. Or...
Is the buck rabbit the male rabbit?
Yeah, but I think that's what
okay.
It is. And the Welsh rarebit blended with tomato sauce on over the top, they call that a blushing bunny.
Sounds like Welsh pizza or something.
Yeah, yeah, you never know. You never know. So, thanks to the Welsh. Oh, and here's another interesting thing from Wikipedia. I tend to go overboard here, but Wikipedia had a thing on Welsh rarebit. Evidently, Welsh rarebit causes vivid dreams. There are a couple books about people have vivid dreams and
maybe it's the beer they put in the Welsh rarebit.
Oh, that must be it too. That must be. It cites a number of comic strips that referred to it, and some books that are based. Even a season 3, episode 24 of Gomer Pyle TV show had Gomer Pyle eating, and it kind of went downhill from there. So it is a very important thing, but it has nothing to do with Easter bunnies, or it has nothing to do with rabbits, really.
No, it's a vegetarian dish, basically.
It is. And what's not to like about toasted cheese?
Toasted cheese, right.
So that's it. And also, calling it rarebit means that rare, there is no rabbit. It is not rabbit. It is rarebit.
Oh, okay.
There you go. They try to cover their bases like that. That's good. That's good. Oh, what do you call an Easter bunny wearing a kilt? Hopscotch. Sorry, this show is really kind of...
I was going to go with the Scotch egg.
Okay. Yeah, it's connected. It is. It's connected there. Mm-hmm. That's good. Well, I want to take this opportunity to say, this is KHOI, and this is the Donnell on a Kitchen. You can find out more at khoifm.org. And I want to mention upcoming. We have an upcoming KHOI book sale, which will be happening April 14th, 15th, 16th, right here at the KHOI studios, 622 Douglas Avenue in downtown Ames. That's April 14th, 15th, and 16th. Support your radio station. Listen to radio and read books. Good thing. Good thing. Well, I want to move on to another bit of Easter sort of things that we do. There is a lot of good things that we eat around Easter. So let's listen to a segment from our vast archives. Here's a little bit on Easter. Another thing about the Easter tradition is baking to go with the feast. The tradition of monks and nuns baking something. After all, we're talking about the start of the Eucharist, the Last Supper, the body and blood of Christ. And some of the nuns and monk bakers would get real creative by using their bread to actually create a body of Christ thing that everybody could share. That sounds kind of macabre, but still, that was it. And making shapes, actually making little bunnies or whatever out of your buns, good idea.
Here's the time for the bad joke. What do you get when you pour hot water down a rabbit hole?
I have no idea.
A hot cross bunny.
Oh, yes, you do. Yes, you do.
So tell us about hot cross bunnies.
Hot cross buns are actually, again, street food. Have they been that way for ages in England and in Europe? The vendors of these little pastries, which were very popular around Easter time, about in the spring, the vendors would sing hot cross buns, one a penny, two a penny, hot cross buns. If you have no daughters, give them to your sons, one a penny, two a penny, hot cross buns. Hot cross buns, little small yeast-raised pastries. They were decorated this way decorated and celebrated even in ancient Babylonian Egypt, but the familiar hot cross buns date back to England in the 1300s, and they were served during Good Friday and given, along with those eggs, to far-traveling churchgoers on Easter Sunday. So a recipe is just making a nice, sweet, yeast-raised bun, and this one is...
Now, they're not too sweet, usually.
No. This has a little sugar in it, but it's flavored with cinnamon, cloves, nutmeg, and currants, and finely diced, candied orange peels. And you let those little things raise. What makes them hot cross buns is traditionally they'd be raised in little circles, and you would cut a cross in them. So you'd have a cross in it. But you do not have to do that. You can also just make a little drizzle of icing. And my recipe here calls for lemon frosting icing to make a little cross on top of the hot cross buns.
I have to say, this year I was looking at hot cross bun recipes because making them at home is fun. It is a yeasted recipe, so you need to make it one day and let it rise and da-da-da-da-da. So glancing through the internet options, I would say if you're going to pick a recipe off the internet, my experience is hot cross buns can be kind of dry and maybe you'd like them a little bit more sweet. So if you're going to bother to bake them, pick a recipe that's got a little more butter in it or some kind of shortening and a little more sugar rather than less.
It's a treat after
all. Yeah, yeah. But I the last time I baked them, I really enjoyed them. So
yeah, good. Well, you put a special flavor? What kind of flavoring do you put in?
I think the raisin one is some dried fruits, right?
Dried fruits, okay.
I might have used currants, too. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, you can doll it up. You could put some dried cherries or cranberries in it. You know, make it your own. But it was kind of fun for, you know, early morning Easter-y thing.
Very good. Hot cross buns. That was a little bit of wisdom from an old Donna Lana Kitchen show. Donna, what would you like to say? You have a disclaimer or anything?
Okay. I'm having a bah humbug Easter so far. Because I knew we were going to air this bit about the hot cross buns, I said, oh, I'm going to make this again. It's been a while since I actually made them. And I had such a good time with them. And they came out so, they were delightful. And so I have all this memory in my brain, and I'm like, okay, I'm going to do this again this year. So I'm on the internet looking at recipes and na-na-na-na-na because I can't remember where I got the recipe that was so successful last time. I looked through some books that I had. No, it wasn't in there. So I don't know what recipe I used. I can't even tell you. It could have been 7 or 8 years ago. I have no idea. Anyway, I had fond memories of the missing recipe. So I pulled up a few recipes. I looked at one on the New York Times and there was even a video of her making it. And, you know, so I thought, yeah, it was a little more complicated than I wanted to do. She was one of these fastidious bakers, which I am not, right? So then I thought, okay, I found a recipe on King Arthur, a very reliable website.
Yeah.
So King Arthur's Flour had an easy, that's where I got sucked in, an easy hot cross bun recipe. So I baked it. First I soaked the fruit, did all of that, because I remembered that that was important. I think I soaked currants and cranberries, maybe, in Grand Marnier sauce, because a little orange is kind of... Orange peel is typical, but I didn't have any made. So I did that part for a couple of days, and I was ready. So last night I made them, and I followed the recipe, and I have to say, it's terrible. It's absolutely the worst recipe baking experience that I can even remember.
Now, see, this is truth on the air here.
Yeah,
where else
right.
would you hear it?
Right. Bummer. I don't want to discourage you from baking them, but don't use the King Arthur easy hot bun. This should have been a red flag because, of course, I read through the recipes, and I probably read 10 recipes before I figured out what I wanted to do. This recipe had both yeast and baking powder. Now, that's not right, is it,
wait,
Lana?
Was it like a fast? I mean, did it say like it was fast?
It said easy.
It was trying to boost things along.
Easy, right? Hmm. Well, what it produced was something that was like the worst scone you've ever eaten. Think dog biscuit. It wasn't that hard because, of course, I put in extra butter.
Yeah,
and
I put in
a little extra sugar because I like mine. You can't call it sweet, Lana, except for the frosting.
Well, no, not if you put in extra. I hate to see what it would be without it, because really it was quite, let's call it a basic dough.
I brought it in to embarrass myself here in the studio. It was just like, oh, what a disappointment, you know. So I'm empathizing with all of you cooks who occasionally have a mishap. This was no fun, and I was looking forward to it, and they're terrible. It's too dry. And it does not taste, it doesn't feel yeasted at all. It really feels like a scone.
Yeah.
And if I was going to make scones, I would have done a lot better job than this.
Huh. So there you have it. Watch out there. Evidently, well, of course, with the internet and as much information is out there, you're gonna come across the dead every now and then.
And it's true. And I would normally say that the recipes from King Arthur's Flour are well tested, and I'm shocked that they did it. Now, what I could have done is just go ahead and take a scone recipe and put the marinated fruit in it, and then the seasonings that are, traditional for hot crust buns. And that probably would have been better than what I ended up with. So,
Well.
I know, I'm bummed. This has been a hard year. My friend Earl, the farmer, said to me recently, "We've had 5 winters this year." And I knew exactly what he meant. It's just been up and down and up and down. And in fact, we may get another storm today between whatever goes on in New York and whatever lands here. There may be more tornadoes are predicted today.
Last Friday? Yep. Our farm got quite a little bit of hail. Luckily, the crops are far from up. But boy, it blew some flashing off my house and
pounds on the windows.
Boy, did it ever clean the windows! Boy, it just. But I thought we weren't having windows, so we're into the interesting weather. Yes, this is Iowa. Oh, good. Well, let's move away from hot cross buns. We've got other things to talk about. There's a recipe that, I'm going to dive into this one because I've always said I'm going to dive into this one. There is something called a Finnish Easter bread, and I found a very similar recipe called Ukrainian Easter bread. And I thought, well, Finnish Easter bread. Oh, 3 cheers for Finland. They're part of NATO now, all those.
Oh, yes, as of today.
All those political things going around. But anyway, for Easter, to celebrate new calves and to celebrate new birth and celebrate cows,
melting snow.
And cows milking again after a long winter, Finnish Easter bread is, again, a rich, buttery, milky,
It's sweet, and
it's a yeast raised thing, but it is baked in a milk pail. And I must say this must be a Finnish milk pail because the pail is a very flat sided.
Straight sided.
I don't have a Finnish milk pail. And it says don't use a galvanized pail. You can use large coffee cans or large empty cans. That works.
Well, we don't even hardly have those kinds of cans anymore.
No, we don't. I go into my garbage to get some. But I have some metal straight-sided things that I used as something to put a flower pot in. So I do have something shaped like that. I'm going to give it a try.
So what's in the Finnish one?
Oh, the Finnish Easter bread. It is 2 packages of yeast, 1/2 cup warm water, 1.5 cups light cream, scalded and cooled, 2 cups sifted regular all-purpose flour, 5 egg yolks, cup sugar.
Oh, good. So it's sweeter and more egg than the...
A cup of butter. Salt.
A cup of butter.
This is good. This is good. And now this rises.
Now we're talking.
Rises overnight, and then, and then you put it in. And for flavoring, salt, cardamom, lemon peel, orange peel, raisins, blanched almonds, a little bit more milk. And after it's risen, you work in 2 cups of rye flour and all
rye
these
rye flour.
Uh-huh.
Evidently. Okay. Uh-huh. Okay. Finish.
And
okay.
a bit more flour to knead it. You knead it for quite a while, 10 minutes, and then you've got this wonderful poofy dough.
Now, Lana, do you hand knead or do you use a machine with a dough hook?
No, I hand knead. It's kind of fun. I don't do it that often. That kneading bread is a fun thing to do. Mm-hmm. So I do that.
So you and the end product is one of those mushroom shaped things because of course it grows out of the top of the cylinder.
Yep. Theoretically.
Yes. And the same with the Ukrainian Easter bread. It's done in a can too.
Yeah. So
with frosting on top.
With frosting on top.
Yes. The glaze is vanilla. Oh, and sprinkles if you want them.
Oh, very good.
Yeah, the Ukrainian one is the same, similar. Yeast, eggs, sugar, and raisins. Yep.
And, yep. And let it rise and do all that. And
oh, except for, instead of yeast, their starter is 3 potatoes peeled and chopped, a quart. Yeah, you got to make your own starter.
Yeah, You can do that, but no, I'm going to go with the finish.
Yeah, well,
finish
those Ukrainians, they're diligent people.
Very good.
As we are seeing these days.
Oh, very good. So, I'll check in with the Donalana show next week.
I wish you better luck with your Easter breads than I had with mine this year.
Oh.
I may just give up for Easter and actually make a sweetened scone or something.
You know, I always order pizza, Donna. Okay. So, what did the Easter Bunny say to the carrot? It's been nice gnawing you. And one more bad bunny joke. This is a chicken and an Easter egg walk into the bar. The bartender says, "Which one of you is first?"
Oh, the chicken or the egg. Oh, okay, that might be the baddest bad bunny joke.
It is. It kind of scrapes the bottom there. Yeah. Oh, dear.
Oh, well, at least nothing was X-rated. Thank you, Lana.
Well, good. Well, have a fine Easter celebration, however you decide to celebrate. And do something with eggs. Bake something nice. Have folks over.
It's a holiday.
Share a chocolate something or other. That's a tradition, too. Yes, it is. Thanks for joining us today. I want to also reiterate that the KHOI book sale is coming up.
We forgot to even mention it's jelly bean season.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, okay. Jelly beans. Jelly beans. Beans, yes. Actually, I really like jelly beans, Donna.
Do you pick a favorite flavor out?
I eat all the black ones first, but then it doesn't matter.
Oh, I like the orange ones.
Oh, see? That's why they make them in all those different colors. Yes, they do. You've been listening to the Donalana Kitchen. You can find us here live at noon on KHOI Community Radio, 89.1 FM, 7 p.m., and repeated 7 p.m. on Tuesday evenings, anytime on this fine radio station today. We had music by the Barn Arnold Band. You heard the Peacock Rag, and we're going to go out with Little Rabbit. Happy Easter. My name is Lana Noctigal.
And I'm Donna Prisgintas.
And we've had engineering by Mike Murphy. Eat good food, enjoy life.
Where's your mammy? Little rabbit, where's your mammy? Little rabbit, where's your mammy?